It's the old buddy cop opposites gotta work together deal. One cop's a woman and the other's a woman. Ah, okay. We talk with Katie Dippold, writer of The Heat, on this episode of Mighty Movie Podcast.
Agent Sarah Ashburn.
Why are you about to be interrogated by an officer?
I am an officer, and that's my perp.
Could you just close the door on the way out?
I'll shut the door on you. Will you lay down here, put your head in the door, and I'll slam it about 157,000 times.
Aw, girl, you better run.
I'm going to make you bend over, and I'm going to reach up into your pocket and get the keys to your house. And then I'm going to drive there and stab you with your own badge. That's what I'm going to do.
Let's loosen that up.
Surprise!
Come on, man!
Get out, bull in China shop!
What part of out do you not understand?
You wanna go out?
We'll take you out.
I can't hold you!
All right, let's pull him over. Come on.
No, wait, I'm not kidding anymore, really. I can't lift him up.
He's all right, right? The metal car broke his fall?
Pretty awesome.
You are killing us out there. You don't fit in.
I am a federal agent.
What are those?
They're Spanx. They're Spanx. They just hold everything together.
Why? What's gonna come popping out?
You never saw Axel Foley and Billy Rosewood have to deal with Spanx, did you? So, okay, this is The Heat, the new comedy by Paul Feig, starring Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy as two cops who have to work together to nab a drug kingpin. And as for that opposites working together thing, as I mentioned in the intro, it's not quite as simple as it usually is. They're both women, duh. They're both badasses in their own way, although Bullock is more by-the-book FBI badass, and McCarthy is more Boston police force loose cannon badass, so that's where the characters spark off each other, and that's all to the good. Feig got great mileage out of McCarthy in her supporting role in Bridesmaids and takes advantage of everything she can bring here, and this is Feig's first time with Sandra Bullock, and he gets good chemistry going between the two actresses. Lots of good laughs here, including with the supporting cast, and we'll be discussing that in the interview. So we did talk with Katie Dippold, who's making her feature film writing debut with The Heat. She's done work both as writer and on camera on such shows as Mad TV and Parks and Recreation. So let's get her take on it right now. Here we go. I think it's so sweet that you're doing this despite the fact that everybody knows women aren't funny.
Well, you know, it's just a silly thing I'm doing. You know, I should be back home. I have so much, you know, dishes to wash, but, you know. It's been good.
I know you come out of improv comedy. I was wondering if that's still a thing. Jerry Lewis notwithstanding, is that still sort of a meme that goes on?
What's that?
Women aren't funny.
It's so crazy to me that debate is still happening. My experience has been good, just in sense of like the Upright Citizens Brigade is super supportive and female friendly. There's just no question whether females are funny. I mean, it was started by like Amy Poehler and the other three members of the UCB. Amy Poehler's like the funniest person in the world, and then the other two shows I wrote for, like Mad TV and Parks and Recreation. It's just the same thing. Like at Parks and Rec, there were like five females on the writing staff at one point. The guys there are all know that women are funny. So I don't know. I haven't had any experience of hitting some wall or anything. Also, to be honest, like the funniest men I know just don't think that women aren't funny. You know what I mean? Like, the kind of person that's like, oh, women aren't funny, I probably wouldn't find them that enjoyable anyways.
So it syncs up. Yeah. You know, you did do Parks and Recreation, and I'm presuming you were in on it from the beginning. Is that right?
I started season two.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Okay. So it did start, and I know you've got something like, according to IMDb, 7 credits, actual on-screen mm-hmm. credits. I'm presuming that you were part of the writing staff, though, all through the time.
Yeah.
So what was, you know, because it started out as, you know, The Office knockoff, and eventually it developed its own personality. What was your experience with that? Was it a willful thing that happened there, or did it just sort of happen?
By the time I started, they had already been talking a long time about where they wanted the show to go and any kind of changes they wanted to do and all sorts of developments. So I feel like I came in, but we sort of were already going in a different in a certain direction. But I don't know. It seems like season one was just kind of, to me, it felt like just classic show development and just mm-hmm. learning as you're going and seeing what kind of direction you, like what things you liked that happen you want to see more of, you know? Like, I feel like that last episode, Rock Show, there were things about that episode that they really liked and like wanted to just, oh, let's try more of that kind of thing, you know?
So, on to The Heat. You were writing this during your time at mm-hmm. Parks and Recreation, and my initial question before I found that out was whether you had been writing that with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy mm-hmm. in mind, but I gather not. So, what was the birth of that?
I always loved buddy cop movies and just. I just feel like there's a lot of, to me, it's like there's a lot, you know, there's a lot of wish fulfillment in movies, and so many movies about females are trying to get that husband, you know, or it's like always about, like, just very often it's about a love interest, which is great, but I feel like there's just more to it than that. Like, I would love to be, like, when I watched buddy cop movies growing up, the two guys were so funny, and they're tough, and they're cool, and they're badass, and they're like, have some, you know, great banter, but then they suddenly take down this drug lord, and I was like, I would love that, you know? Like, I don't want to just find a husband. Like, I would love to have that kind of life, and so I kind of wanted to do that, and I thought maybe there's other females that, you know, feel the same way, and it would be just fun. That's what I would want to see. Like, that would be fun to see that. And so yeah, I started working on it at Parks and Rec, and in terms of having someone in mind, it was just, there were different people that would pop in my head, you know, at different scenes and times, but it was just most important to me that they'd be really funny, you know? I was scared that my dreams would come true and the movie would happen, then it would be like two women who are beautiful and dazzling, but not at all funny. So I got very lucky.
You know, when I look at something like Hot Fuzz, I see that as mm-hmm. an overt subversion of the form. Did you envision this as subversive as well?
To me, there's like this range, and I would think about this a lot. Like, on the one side, you have like Naked Gun, you know, it's like a parody, but I love Naked Gun that I grew up watching it. But then the other end, you have like the ones that are more like straight drama, like Lethal Weapon, or which has humor in it, but it's really a serious movie in 48 hours, you know. And so we would talk about like where on this spectrum, or you know, where in the range is this? And to me, it's like somewhere in the middle. Like, we wanted to be having like fun with the genre, which I feel like Hot Fuzz and Shaun of the Dead are both great at, where it doesn't feel like a parody. It's like you're just having fun within this genre, you know, and like all those things could happen in that world, you know. And so like for this, we wanted everything to be treated very real, like the bad guys be scary, and all these things could actually happen, but just finding the humor in these characters dealing with that situation and dealing with each other.
You know, I look at this, and at least on one level, if you could think about it, you could say, well, it's just a gender-bent version mm-hmm. of the buddy cop film. You know, they've taken the roles, put women in them, mm-hmm. boom, except that there are nuances to this. Do you want to talk about
sure.
that?
Yeah, you know, at the very beginning, when I started writing it, I wanted to just have it be, I thought it, you know, maybe it should be just like it's just that it's two women and then that's it. Like, I don't want it to be about them running and tripping over a purse or something, you know? But then it seemed like a mistake to not address that they're females, because that's also what's different about it. And so, like, I, you know, I tried to think, like, what does that mean? Like, being a woman in that field, like, what kind of obstacles do they face and how is it different, you know? And because I didn't want it to just be a gimmick where it's just two ladies and that's it. And so also then we thought even more about, because like every buddy cop movie is just, you know, it's ultimately this friendship story. And so we got to just really think about what's female friendship like and what's, I don't know, I've always found it harder making a really close female friend as you get older. You know, it's not like in high school you spend a bunch of time together. And it's also, you know, I feel like in that field, these kind of characters, it's going to be tough for them to make friends. So, I don't know. I feel like it's not just that it's swapping men for women. I feel like we tried to address female friendship and just, you know, kind of exploring these characters.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you about a particular bit, and you may not want to talk about it because it is a joke, and I don't know whether you want to blow any jokes in the film. But the cat bit with Sandra Bullock at the beginning seems to be sort of a microcosm of what you're trying to do with the film. Do you want to talk about it? Can you explain it a little bit?
I guess that would be an example of, like, I felt like I wanted to show that this woman is very alone. But I feel like in so many movies you see, oh, it's the sad lady who has a cat. So I just tried to just take it a step further and have more fun with it. Like, oh, no, this woman doesn't have a cat. She uses her neighbor's cat, you know? So it was just trying to have fun with the kind of thing you see a lot of.
How long did it take to cast that cat, by the way?
That cat really... everything was held up because of that cat. We couldn't close that cat's deal. You know, we had Sandra and Melissa were all set, but that cat, I mean, it was tense negotiations for months.
They tend to come with very long riders, is what I understand.
I'm sorry?
Riders, you know, the addendum to the contract, you know, everything.
Yeah,
they need.
Oh, I had to do so many punch-ups for him.
Speaking of punch-ups, okay, you wrote this script originally. You find out Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy are in on it. And I want to talk about both actresses, but, you know, Sandra Bullock does come with her persona, you know, what you perceive. But Melissa McCarthy is like persona, you know. So what was the writing like for her in particular? What did you have to keep in mind with
for
her?
For which one, Melissa?
For Melissa, yes.
Well, she's just really exciting because she just goes for it. And you just, I feel like when, especially when she improvises, like, you think that, oh, okay, that was great. But, you know, she's reached that limit, you know, obviously that's it. But then she'll be like, no, no, that's not even close to where the limit is, and just keep going further and longer. And it's always so exciting. So, it's, I feel like she's inspiring. So, like, doing rewrites and tweaks for her, just having that in mind, it kind of pushed me to kind of push more in the punch-ups, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm looking at things, and, you know, one of the things that stood out for me from the trailer in particular, so I'll drop this line, is that she has this line at one point, what's going to pop out? And she puts this spin on it, so... Do you write for that, or do you just write it and just trust her to go with it?
What do you mean by she puts a spin on it?
Just the way she interprets the line. I can only call it like a Melissa McCarthy-ness to it, you know?
Well, what's fun, the wonderful joy of being able to be on set is, like, you get to kind of see how you... just sort of are able to write for how she talks, you know, and so it just kind of made it easier, you know. So if you see a scene going on and you have an idea for a punch up, like, you can just quickly scribble it and then give a post-it note to Paul, and if he likes it, he'll give it to her. And so, like, you try as much as you can to, you know, write to that voice.
Yeah, you were one of the blessed writers who got an opportunity to be on set during the shooting. What was that like? How frequently were you called in to participate?
I was there the whole time. I mean, every scene I was sitting on the side with like a notepad and pen. And all I've ever heard is that when you sell a movie, then it's out of your hands forever. Or someone's going to come in and rewrite it, and then you'll just see it in the theaters, mm-hmm. and it'll be a totally different thing. So I felt really lucky to be involved from the beginning to end. Like when I first went to Boston, I didn't know how long I'd be there, but then I noticed that my flight was only one way. I'm like, well, that seems weird. Shouldn't there be a return? And then it was there for like 3 months, like pre-production. So yeah, every scene I would go. We had a woman come on for a week to help with some punch-ups named Paula Pell, and she was a writer. She's a writer still at SNL. She's been there for many, many years, and she's just a pro. And I saw the system she had where she would write a joke on a post-it note and hand it to Paul, and it was so great because up before that, if I had a joke to pitch, you know, I'd go up to him and then pitch it, and he'd be like, oh, yeah, we could do that, or, oh, yeah, and we'd talk about it, and it just, like, took up so much time, whereas the post-it, you could just write the joke, hand it to him. If he liked it, he would do it, and if not, then you don't need to discuss it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it just also freed me up to just write so many more punch-ups. Yeah, so that was a great system.
Mm-hmm. Sort of a tangential to the rewriting. I don't know if you've noticed this or not, but it seems to me like a lot of the sequences that show up in the trailer are not the same sequences that show up in the film. And I dare say that the entire trailer consists of different takes, right, of the film than what gets into the film. And it could be the nuance of the way a line is spun, all the way down to the shot with Sandra and Melissa on the pool table where she cuts her hand.
Right, yes.
You know, so...
Yeah. That is interesting. Yeah, I know. I noticed that when I go to the movies, when I see something in the trailer that's not in the movie, but I personally always, I like a pleasant surprise. I'm like, oh, that's different than mm-hmm. the thing I've seen a billion times. So hopefully people have that same experience.
I wanted to ask you about one of the smaller roles, but it sort of struck me as interesting here again, subverting the form Captain Woods mm-hmm. in the film. Usually in the buddy cop film, the Captain Woods is the guy who comes out of the office and goes, McClintock, you know, yeah, that sort of thing. In this particular case, it seems the further we get into the film, the more quiet he mm-hmm. seems to get.
I would imagine at one point in his career, he was the captain that would shout McClintock at his office. But Melissa McCarthy's character, it just has worn him down over the years, and so he's just exhausted. I think there's a couple different takes of when Sandra Bullock's character first comes in and meets him. Mm-hmm. But I can't remember what one we used, because I think in the script it was like... He says something like, God, I can't deal with this right now, like, or something like that. I don't remember, but I just imagine that guy is just struggling. He probably sits in the parking lot for a good 10 minutes before he can get up the courage to get out of his car and get inside the station. But, yeah, he's tired.
And also I want to talk about Jane Curtin mm-hmm. being in the film. Was that Paul Feig's idea to bring
her
in?
Yeah, that was Paul Feig's idea, and I was so thrilled. Like, she's such a hero of mine. That's Jane Curtin. You know, that's yeah. crazy. I grew up, like, just looking up to that woman, and I think she's amazing, and she was so nice. And that's also the best thing when you have a hero and you meet them and they're really nice, you know, because that's depressing when that's not the case. So, but she was so funny, and that whole, all those actors in the Mullins family, they had so much fun together. It was really heartwarming.
Mm-hmm. Not on screen enough.
Yeah, I know. I wish there could be a whole movie on just on that family.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but also Jane Curtin as well.
Right, yeah, I yeah. know. Jane Curtin, the more you can have her in something, the better. She's just great.
Let me ask you this, though. You're a New York, actually New Jersey native, mm-hmm. I gather, and you moved to New York and then went to L.A., writing about Boston. Was Boston always the location in the film?
No, to be honest, the first... Because I've never lived in Boston. I think I was only there once for a night in my life before this. And so I didn't want to try writing an area I didn't know well. I thought it would just be so transparent. So I actually wrote it for New York. But then we ended up switching it to Boston, and I'm so glad we did. It just added so much more... flavor and fun. There's just so many great little things we could do with it, and the people were awesome. I constantly think about how much I miss Boston, because that was really fun time.
Mullen seems appropriately Boston, though, when you look at the character.
Yeah, she does. Absolutely.
Okay, so, well, I did want to ask you, because I don't know how much influence you had on this, but Spoken Reasons as the character, and I've never heard of him before, I've never seen him before. Yeah. How was the character originally written? What sort of take did he bring to it?
The character stayed, you know, pretty close. The character stayed as kind of as it was invented in the script. I guess the only difference is I imagined someone much older, but I thought it was fun seeing him be this kind of young, like, you know, criminal. But yeah, he's great. He's a really nice, like, guy. Like, he was delightful. It was really fun. He definitely brought an energy that I didn't expect. There's something about him that felt very real to me, you know? Like, not like a cartoonish, like, pimp character. Like, he just seemed like, I don't know. There's something about him that just seemed very real, which was I was very happy about.
Mm-hmm. So I looked at IMDb this morning, and I see there's now a The Heat 2 there with question marks for the date. Is this a thing?
It's a thing. Hopefully, you know, we're working on it and we're talking about it, but we shall see. Hopefully, it can happen. You know, the idea we've been talking about, I think, would be so fun. So I'm really hopeful.
Katie, thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
The Heat, of course, is now playing everywhere you want to be, because it is a big summertime movie and good summertime laughs too. And we're taking a break for a few weeks. Next up will probably be a new Temple of Bad. Subject, Santa Claus the Movie. Christmas in July, and a little lump of coal it is in your stocking as well. You want to write me, send that email to dan@mightymoviepodcast.com. That's it. Thank you for listening, and have fun. This has been a production of Upstart Company NYC. Copyright 2013 Dan Persons. All rights reserved, no unauthorized duplication permitted.